until 11 for a special 5.5-hour program of music by the great Ukrainian composer Valentin Silvestrov, who will be celebrating his 80th birthday on the 30th of this month. Silvestrov is a fascinating composer, and do hope you can join me this Friday morning between 5:30 until 11. It all happens right here on WPRB, where we go now back to the music by my guest, Kenneth Fuchs.
Thank you.
You were just listening to Discover the Wild, Overture for Orchestra by my guest Kenneth Fuchs. The work completed in 2007 was just performed by the London Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Joanne Folletta. Well, Ken, I'm going to do what you requested of me. Discover the Wild, Overture for Orchestra. I'm going to ask simply, how did it come into existence?
In the fall of 2005, I had a phone call from a gentleman in Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
He was filming a nature
series called Discover the Wild, a nature series for television, and he had heard my music on the first LSO disc, and he said, we're looking for a theme music for our program, and what we would like is for you to write the theme music and then music for play off and play on. And so we talked about this, and I said, well, how about a three-part overture where I'll give you the theme, and then I'll compose it in a way where you have different types of music that you can use in throughout the program and to play the show on and play the show off. And he said, great, and here's what we're going to pay you. And I said, fine, I'll write the piece, and I was looking forward to having my music on television. And we were going to record it actually in London. And he said, fine, everything's going well, I'm raising the money. About 3 weeks before the recording session, he called and he said, I'm so sorry to tell you, I haven't been able to raise the money. We can't do the recording. We can't record your overture, and I don't have the money to pay you. And I thought, well, there goes my career as a film and television composer. But nonetheless, I was left with this piece, and I brought it to London to record in 2006. And this is the spectacular recording your listeners just heard with the LSO conducted by Joanne Folletta.
Wonderful. Really wonderful. And you know, Ken, your whole feeling of orchestration is really marvelous.
Well, I have spent years
Combination, yes, and balance and blend.
Studying the masterworks, and really the only way to do it, as I tell my students over and over, is when you find a work that you love, that inspires you, that whose orchestration interests you, you get the score, you go to the piano, and you play through it bar by bar. Take the piece apart, look at the chord voicing, and try and understand why the composer selected the instruments that he or she did for that particular emotional moment in the piece. That's how you study orchestration.
And why it's so effective for you.
That's right, and that's what I've been doing my whole life long.
Sounds terrific. Sounds terrific. Well, we're going to go now to more music. And I thought, since we are approaching the anniversary of 9/11, we would go to a chamber work titled Falling Trio. Now, there is, I guess you could say, a sequence of pieces leading up to it. Why don't you share with us a bit about that?
Well, Falling Trio and another chamber work, Falling Canons, for solo piano, grow out of a work for baritone voice and orchestra that I composed titled Falling Man. And I wrote Falling Man over a two-year period, starting in 2008 to 2010, and it was not a commissioned work. It was a work that I had to write for myself. Having lived in New York City for 20 years, I, along with millions of other people, were deeply affected by the tragedy of September 11th, 2001, and it took me several years to figure out. I knew I had to respond somehow through music to 9/11, but it took me a few years to figure out how and what kind of piece it would be. I encountered a novel by Don DeLillo in 2007 called Falling Man, and when I read the first few pages of that stunning work, I knew I had found the inspiration for what I needed to do to respond to 9/11. And with the librettist J.D. McClatchy, we fashioned a work for me to set, a libretto for me to set to music for voice and orchestra. And it became crystal clear. The protagonist of the novel witnesses the terror and chaos of the morning of 9/11, and it struck me that that protagonist would be the everyman that I could compose for. And so the idea of a work for solo voice and symphony orchestra in the sound of a baritone is how Falling Man emerged. And I did so much sketching for the piece that I had a lot of music that I actually didn't use.
Material, yeah.
And a lot of contrapuntal sketches, and I thought, you know, this would really work in various combinations for different chamber groupings. So the first was this work, Falling Trio, that I composed especially for my dear friend Jeffrey Beagle, wonderful mm-hmm. pianist who had formed a trio back then. And that's how Falling Trio came about. We gave the premiere at Barge Music with a stunning picture window view of Lower Manhattan on
wow.
a Sunday afternoon to celebrate the 10th anniversary
of 9/11. Let me ask you this, and we all remember that. What
yeah.
were you doing when 9/11 hit?
By that time, I had lived in the city for 20 years, but by that time, I had left, and I was director of the School of Music at the University of Oklahoma. And it was just a surreal experience to watch on television as the aircraft struck the towers and to see those buildings crumble from so far away, because, of course, I had spent so much time in the city and in those buildings. And
unbelievable, yes. Watching all of that.
Even now, as we're speaking about it, it's hard to comprehend what happened.
When that happened, I was right here.
Wow.
I was on the air. It was a very
bringing music to
playing music. And what was fascinating, or what eerie about the whole thing, and I've written about this on my Facebook a mm-hmm. number of times. What was eerie about that experience was that I was doing a program titled East Meets West.
Wow. Yes.
And I look at the playlist for that program, you know, like Persian Set of Henry Cowell.
Yes.
And all those pieces. And I look at that playlist even today, and I just get chills and the shakes like you wouldn't believe.
Well, somehow that was meant to be, that you were playing that music, and of course you, as you do, every week, nearly every day of your life, bringing comfort and perspective to people
yeah,
through music.
So, a weird experience. But anyway, let's listen now to Falling Trio. This is by my guest, Kenneth Fuchs, and we hear Trio 21. Jeffrey Beagle is the pianist, Kinga Augustin is the violinist, and Robert Demain is the cellist. Thank you. You were just listening to music by my guest, Kenneth Fuchs, and Ken wanted to be co-announcer with me right now, and I'm going to let him take over. Ken, microphone is all yours.
Thanks, Marvin.
Anytime.
It is such a thrill to be here with you. That was Falling Trio, composed in 2010 to remember the 10th anniversary of 9/11 in a remarkable performance by Jeffrey Beagle, piano, Kinga Augustin, violin, and Robert Demain. Cello.
You did a great job.
Thank you.
It was a wonderful job.
I'm having fun.
I know. I can tell. I can tell you're smiling and jumping. It's really, Ken, I have to say, this is a total joy.
It's a thrill to be
here. We're having so much fun today here.
We are indeed. Thank you.
We are really.
We're rocking it.
Yeah, they really were. They really were.
So were we.
Yeah. Oh, it's doing very, very well. Anyway. Moving right along, in just a few minutes, we are going to sample an upcoming release of your music on Naxos, which was literally just recorded a couple of weeks ago.
Right out of the studio.
It was right out of the studio. And before we get to more music, share with us a bit about some of the challenges you have experienced as a composer.
Well, do we have the whole morning?
I had a feeling you were going to say that.
Well, you know, in a way, it's the more things change, the more they stay the same. The wonderful thing for composers now is that we all have to be entrepreneurs and find meaningful ways to make our art, to put it out there. It takes an enormous amount of will and self-belief,
belief in your own work.
And not because, you love it in the wrong way. You love it in the right way, and you believe in it, and you want people to experience your art. So this means that composers have to find ways to have their music recorded, to find a publisher or self-publish, to make friends with many conductors and performers, and to advocate for performances of of your work. It's very challenging, actually, to have orchestral music programmed, given the climate for classical music in the United States and the climate for contemporary classical music. I mean, there are so many wonderful conductors out there and orchestras who support composers, but still, those are very fragile ecosystems as musical institutions that have audiences and audience base to accommodate, and they have to raise money and exist. Mm-hmm. So it's just a full time task to
get your stuff out.
Absolutely,
there. Yeah, it's very, very difficult, and like you say, people have to do it themselves.
Well, you know, it's not like the heyday of recording.
Columbia Records.
In the 50s and 60s, when Columbia recorded the complete works of Stravinsky or Copland. Naxos is doing an enormous service to American composers through the American Classic series, and I'm very grateful that they released my discs. But you know, these are all self-generated projects. All composers have to find ways to get recording projects together and get the discs out.
It's tough. And now, but let's talk for a moment about the climate for contemporary composers. I notice now with the work I do, and I've talked about this before, is that I feel right now, and I haven't gotten shot for saying this yet, so I'll say it again.
Well, you may.
But I feel right now that we are in one of music's most exciting times.
Absolutely.
And you know what's so amazing about this? Mm-hmm. Is that every style is valid today.
That is one of the most remarkable developments, I think, in the last 25 years. I was saying earlier, when I first started my graduate studies at Juilliard in 1979, the kind of music that was being written is so different from what composers can do anything now. They can write anything. There's no stigma. If, to be quite honest, if I had shown up to Juilliard with the kind of music, the emotionally accessible, directly communicative music that I'm writing now, I probably wouldn't have been accepted into the school because
it was not part of the styles they were teaching.
Exactly. So, there are more contemporary operas being written than I can ever remember. There are wonderful orchestras and conductors who do program contemporary music and have an audience base that allows them to do that. And thankfully, we have Naxos, who promotes contemporary music all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very positive
time.
They're
doing a great job.
Yes.
They really are doing a great
job. They are indeed.
I wonder how many releases do they have in their catalog now?
Oh, gosh.
Their contemporary, their American classic series.
Hundreds.
Just that alone.
And, when I first approached Joanne, we'll talk a little bit more about this later, doing a solo disc of my music, that was in 2003, and Naxos had really only just begun solo composer discs.
Yeah.
Marin Alsop was conducting some with the Colorado Symphony, Michael Torkey and Michael Doherty, and it was just the beginning of the American Classic series. And so in the last 14, 15 years, American Classics has just soared. The number of releases is astonishing. Naxos releases at least a dozen discs a month in that series or more. So it's a remarkable opportunity.
And it's a great thing to be able to experience composers you never heard of before.
Many
stylistic. To me, the most exciting recording I purchase or get or whatever is by a composer I never heard of before, and read a little description, which is just someone's interpretation. Oh, this sounds like something I'm really going to like.
Yes, and other independent labels
in
the United States
that
are releasing contemporary music, and they all deserve as much praise as we can possibly get.
Yeah, we need to support them.
Absolutely,
because by supporting them, we're supporting the composers. Right. We're supporting the future of music. And
and speaking of American composers, it's our language. It's the body of our musical culture. That's exactly right.
It's just what we are. And one thing I do notice as a music educator, and that of course you are also, is that students I find love new music.
They do. And how all of us receive music now in our world, globally, digitally, downloading and streaming. Of course, the students who come to us have grown up in this digital age, and their awareness of contemporary music and what even their fellow students are doing is so much deeper than it was
25 years ago.
It's a thrill to teach young musicians because of their intellectual curiosity and how much they've already been exposed to.
Yeah, and a lot of times, too, with a lot of the music, we're talking about all the styles, you find pieces inspired by various elements of pop and jazz.
Absolutely.
Written for ensembles. I mean, one composer who is great at that is Michael Doherty, who's done this Dead Elvis. Remember that?
Yes.
Remember when that came out?
That remarkable body of work.
Many composers are doing this. You've got some of these groups, like the string quartet Ethel, and you've got all these ensembles.
And Jack, yes.
And Jack, that are all appealing to younger people, and we're getting this stuff out here. But what's interesting about it, too, it's not just the younger people. It's for more traditional listeners who want something beyond the standard repertoire.
And the
they're getting into it.
Yes, the development of the downtown scene, as we would call it, in classical music is thrilling.
Oh, absolutely.
The alternative venues where we can hear classical music is just so refreshing, really absolutely wonderful.
It's wonderful. It is. And I think we're going definitely in the right direction in terms of keeping this art going beyond our lifetimes.
Yes, well, that's what it's all about.
But we got to keep getting it out there, and we still have to make sure that the education in the schools exposes this repertoire.
Well,
Anyway, that's for another day. But anyway, I know you are getting excited.
Yes. And
you are getting so excited, and I think you're feeling a rush, no pun intended. We are going to go now to your new upcoming CD on Noxus.
Okay.
When was it recorded? What is on it? And when will it be available? It's exciting, and I see you want to just take over, so go ahead.
Well,
it's all yours.
Thank you. As we said earlier, I've just literally returned from London last week. Two remarkable days at Abbey Road Studios with Joanne Folletta and the LSO. And we recorded four works with four star soloists. And I'm so thrilled to have the opportunity to tell your listeners about it. The disc will include my concerto for electric guitar and orchestra called Glacier. And our wonderful soloist is DJ Spar. And then we recorded, Here It Comes, Rush, my concerto for saxophone.
And we're going to hear a little bit of that in a
we're
little,
gonna,
just
we're
a few
going
minutes.
To
go ahead.
Give everybody a little taste of that.
I'm sorry,
and
I interrupted
with,
you.
It's okay. This is a dialogue. And with our remarkable soloist, Timothy McAllister, on Rush. And then my new piano concerto, Spiritualist, which is inspired by three paintings of Helen Frankenthaler, my dear friend Jeffrey Beagle, whom we heard play Falling Trio, recorded that concerto. And then a new work for countertenor with obbligato cello and English horn and chamber orchestra called Poems of Life, based on 12 poems by the American poet Judith G. Wolfe and our wonderful, stunningly talented 23-year-old countertenor, R.E.A. Nussbaum-Cohen. So that's the disc. And just heard the first edits from our producer, Tim Handley, and we're going to reveal a little bit of that in a moment. And Noxos is going to release the disc on September 1st, the very end of August 2018, a year from now.
You mean you don't have it in hand yet?
Well, no.
You meant to. You would. I'm joking.
There's a little work left to do.
I know. But
I'm
this
thrilled
is,
to share this with your audience.
I have to say, when you wrote to me, we have a first edit, and this is going to work great. I mean, I was
we're
very, very
excited. We're
taking
the liberty of giving everybody just a little taste of what's to come. And this is Tim McAllister performing the second movement of Rush. And this is actually called Morning. The work is cast in two movements, Morning or Evening. The first movement is Evening. The second movement is Morning. And the title of the entire piece is Rush. And this is a Rush.
And we are going to hear it. And this is,
I guess, a
world premiere broadcast?
Yes, it is.
Okay, right.
Like the first time ever.
Right off the WPRB.
Darn tootin' right.
Oh, this is great, and let's all enjoy it.
Thank you.
We were just listening to an incredible performance from an upcoming Noxus compact disc featuring the music of my guest, Kenneth Fuchs. I was going to introduce you.
That was the spectacular Timothy McAllister recording Rush with the London Symphony Orchestra 2 weeks ago. And I will share with you, Marvin, and your listeners that when we do these recordings, we sight read and record at the same time. And when Tim finished the first run through of Rush with the LSO, the orchestra applauded. It was absolutely sensational. It was spectacular. And for an orchestra that routinely performs with world-class artists, soloists, and conductors, it was a real tribute to Tim's artistry to have that ovation from the orchestra.
Well, you know, I'm going to bring that in one other question in listening to this. Why are we not hearing more music like this on our concert stage? It's all out there. Well, I can imagine this will bring the house down with any major orchestra.
Well, I certainly hope so. And of course, we're doing it, right? We're putting it out there on the airwaves. And
we are, or you are, or we are, yes.
Yes, we are together, all of us in the musical community. So I'm delighted to have the opportunity to do this with you this morning. And I have great hopes for Rush and its success as a concert.
This should be a standard
concert Rush, yes.
It should be a concert Rush.
Yes, well, with a soloist like that. Yeah.
I mean, it would
and all the solos I have on the disc, but this is was a spectacular
it would
experience.
Bring the house down. You know, it brings back memories. Listening to that, just as I'm talking to you, Ken, when I was at the premiere of the Clarinet Concerto by John Corleone.
Oh wow, what an experience that must have been!
I believe I was at the premiere, or I was like at a performance a year later. But I remember that whole thing, and that was like the very similar, the excitement in a performance of new music.
Well, John was on the forefront of the return, what was called then the return to Romanticism, composing music in a directly communicative style, and it did bring the house down.
It brought, and I remember them doing the Gabrielli.
That's
you know,
right, with the brass.
All
and the,
around the hall, I remember all that.
Fabulous conception. So, yes, we want classical music audiences to stand up and cheer, to stand up for American music, but to stand up and cheer. That's what we want people to do.
Yes, well, that was great, and I'm so glad we could do that today.
I appreciate that. I'm so
it was
glad
wonderful.
We could, give that treat to your listeners.
I'm glad we could do that. I'm glad we could do that. Well, let's move forward, Ken.
Okay.
Speaking that this is something in your future, what else is coming up for you in your future?
Well, I have a couple of commissions to fulfill at the moment. I'm working on a large orchestral work for the Phoenix Symphony Orchestra, which will be premiered March 16th and 17th, 2018, with Tito Munoz in Phoenix. I'm thrilled. Can't wait. I'm really looking forward to it. And then after that, a consortium of 21 bass trombonists has commissioned a bass trombone concerto, which I'm very much looking forward to doing. And following that, a flute concerto for Peg Cornell's wonderful flutist, and flute is my principal instrument, so I'm really looking forward to writing my first flute concerto, yes.
This is great. Well, let's go now to another question, and that leads up to, I think you know what I'm going to ask you, and you kind of told me when we're going to do that by your comment there. You've written, of course, a tremendous amount of music. All you have to do is go to your website, and we'll give the website address in just a moment. Mm. But as you move onward, any genres of things you want to do that you haven't yet? Do you want to write this big symphony?
Yes. I have a list of about 10 pieces that I feel that I must achieve before I go wherever I'm going, but that I think that my canon just has to include. So I am looking forward to writing a large-scale symphony, but also an opera. I have working with a librettist now on a few ideas,
That could be happening.
Yes, that's in the works. And as well as an oratorio, and I still have to write a full-scale violin concerto and a cello concerto. So there are a couple of big pieces ahead of me that I have to finish.
Well, good. That's it. I mean, we want to make sure that you
boy.
Keep
this
busy.
Is at least, and also, this is 10 years of writing, by the way.
Well, you know, but this is great if you have goals. So much of the time, it's like whenever you have a goal, I mean, sometimes you do things for yourself.
Right.
But when you have a deadline or some goal, it helps the creative process, I think, move a little bit more.
It does. And, you know, there hardly a day goes by where I'm not composing, when I'm not working on music. I mean, it's my passion.
Yes.
It's my great joy.
Yes,
it's like vacation for me.
That's what I was going to ask you next. I mean, you teach.
Yes.
I mean, when do you write? Are you one of these composers who works late into the evening or into
sometimes,
the early morning?
Sometimes. You know, I'm devoted to my students and my teaching life at UConn. But around that, I'm home composing. That's my life. That's what I do. Something very unusual has to be happening in my life for me not to be composing that day. When we're in London recording, of course, I'm happy to be doing that. But composing is it's like breathing. I have to do it. I'm not a very happy camper if I'm not composing well.
That sounds great. And now let's go to another topic, which is going to be, I think, fun. Social media.
Oh.
I couldn't resist that because I see we're sitting here,
we're sitting here tweeting, posting. Absolutely.
How has it affected your career?
Absolutely transformed all of our lives. Social media is amazing. And what is amazing about it is that it gives all of us the opportunity to create a community with other people who have the same interests and beliefs. And it certainly is a remarkable way to globally promote our work, as we all must do.
Sure.
We have to do that.
Now, I have a personal question to answer.
Okay.
Are you one of these people that sleeps with your phone?
I couldn't resist. I'm almost embarrassed to answer that. Yes, I do.
Okay, I've been outed. This is fun. I have to say, this is fun. And you know what's funny? As soon as I asked that, you closed your phone.
And turned bright red. I'm
guilty,
glad your audience gets
guilty,
that.
Yes, guilty.
Guilty is charged.
But I have to say, we are having such a great time.
Oh, I am. It's a thrill to be here with you. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
We are having such a great time. You do have a major website.
Yes.
And you can do a tremendous amount of listening to your music on it. What is the website address? Why did you spell the whole thing?
My website address is simply my name. It's www.kennethfuchs, one word, KennethFuchs.com. My husband, Chris von Rosenvinge, is an expert graphic designer, and he designed the site, and you can hear samples of all of my music, all of my recordings. Yes. News, recordings, performance calendar, videos, photographs.
And keeping a site is a tremendous amount of time. My wife,
I know we've been speaking about this, Beata. we need people like this in our lives to support us and help us do what we do.
That's right. Otherwise, if we had to do it ourselves, we wouldn't be able to do what we're meant to do.
Right. And, you know, I'm already doing a lot. Not only am I composing the music, but putting projects together and finding conductors and performers and so forth.
Well, let's go now to one other question.
Okay.
And I still see your phone is closed.
Yes, I haven't.
Let us talk briefly about...
Go ahead.
What? It's just so much fun. Let us talk very briefly, Ken, about the actual process of composing. How does a piece begin and how does it evolve?
Well, I love talking about that because, of course, each piece starts in a different way. A lot of my music is inspired by visual art. I have a very deep connection to the American painter Helen Frankenthaler. We were very good friends during the time that she was alive for 30 years. All of my time in New York and thereafter, I first met her in 1983.
Right.
So visual imagery and poetry, literature is a big inspiration for me. It's not to say that some of my works are what I would call purely abstract with programmatic inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
But a work either evolves through some kind of stimulus like that, or if it's a concerto, certainly for the soloist, right? You write for a soloist, it's kind of like a love affair. That's what it has to be. You have to love their work.
That's right.
And, you know, when I compose, it always starts at the keyboard, doodling, kind of improvising, and that eventually turns into sketching. And I always tell my students, you know, you must write down everything that you that comes to your mind, even if you don't think it's very good, because it is the core, it's the basis of what the piece is going to become. And if you write down a few chords or a melody or ideas for orchestration, you put it aside, you go back to it the next day, you have a reaction to that. You either like it and you continue that, or you scratch it out and start over. But well, you know, that's how composing happens. You have to go to it every day and keep working it. I make an enormous number of sketches in on pencil with pencil on paper before I move to I work in Sibelius before I move to the computer. And there is always a point after I sketch for a few weeks where I think I have enough to start the piece, and then I create the score in music notation software, and I compose directly into the score from the sketches, and I'll go back to the piano and kind of work the piece some more, and then go back and forth to the score until I'm finally just working in the score. Depends on, you know, a piece can take you know, the four pieces we just recorded. The Electric Guitar Concerto Glacier took 13 months to write. I didn't know much about electric guitar, but I sure did learn a lot. A remarkably powerful instrument, expressively powerful instrument. So it was a joy to work on that piece. The Piano Concerto took 9 months, and you know, all these pieces take a year, a little less than a year.
While you're doing those?
You know, I've never been the type of composer who can do that. I do have friends who can work on two pieces at the same time.
Right.
I can't seem to do that. Yeah. I have to sort of stay focused on one piece and see it to the very end before I can start thinking about something else.
Yeah, that sounds like how I am with many things too.
Absolutely.
Can't go all over the place.
Yeah, I can't.
It's everything is focused.
Yes.
Sometimes too much stuff.
Well, sometimes, yes.
Well, we'll be going back to more music after I let you know that you are tuned to WPRB, Princeton, New Jersey, community-supported independent radio at 103.3 FM or online around the world at www.wprb.com. You are tuned to Classical Discoveries. Hope you are enjoying the program. And I just want to remind you that I will be with you next this Friday morning from 5:30 until 11 for a special 5.5-hour program of music by the great Ukrainian composer Valentin Silvestrov, who will be celebrating his 80th birthday on the 30th of this month. I do hope you can join me this Friday morning from 5:30 until 11 for that program. I am back with my guest, Kenneth Fuchs, and we're going to listen now to a rather extensive work, your very beautiful Eventide, which is actually a concerto for English horn from 2003.
When I was an undergraduate student at the University of Miami, I was very interested in the music of Vincent Persichetti, and I knew that I wanted to study with him at Juilliard, which I eventually did. I had the privilege of studying at Juilliard with him and the other wonderful faculty there for 9 years. But I bought an LP of Persichetti's concerto for Thomas Stacey, who was the principal, the English horn soloist of the New York Philharmonic for 32 years, and I just fell in love with the piece. And when I did eventually get to Juilliard and started studying with Persichetti, I had the remarkable opportunity of meeting Tom Stacey, because he taught English horn at the school and, of course, was playing in the orchestra just across the street at then Avery Fisher Hall. Tom and I became fast friends because I loved the instrument, and he was a virtuoso wind soloist, and was so committed to developing contemporary repertoire for English horn. He encouraged